Internet Talk Radio, town crier to the global village.
We're talking with Steve Deering, who's a member of the research staff at Xerox's Palo Alto Research Center. Xerox PARC, of course, is the fountainhead where it all began, and there's work still going on. Steve, welcome to Geek of the Week.
Thank you.
You're the author of Multicasting IP. Now, I know we can do multicasting on Ethernets, and we send a packet out, and several different nodes can receive that at once. Why do we want multicasting at the IP level?
Well, there are two things that multicasting at the IP level does for us. One is the obvious one, that if what you have to do is send the same data to more than one machine, one destination, it's more efficient for the network and for the sender to send only one copy and have the network replicated where necessary. You also achieve parallel concurrent delivery that way, so it reduces the overall delay of delivery. The second reason why multicast is useful is it's a way to send messages to destinations whose individual address you don't know. So for things like advertising services or seeking out services, various auto configuration or resource discovery problems, it's one way to deal with that.
Is multicasting actually being deployed in the Internet? I know you've been working on it a long time. Are we starting to see this become a real service?
It's maybe a little premature to call it a real service. It's out there in experimental mode at the moment. There is the MBone, which is a virtual IP multicast network laid on top of the Internet, which is reaching about, a couple hundred IP networks. I don't know how many sites that represent, because some sites have more than one network. But it's still pretty much an experimental facility. Various service providers are participating in the MBone, learning more about it and finding out what the dangers of offering such a service is.
You call it a virtual IP network. Is this not an integral part of the Internet itself? This is not just an enhanced version of the Internet protocol?
It is. It is an official Internet standard extension to IP. The problem is we don't have the IP multicast routing support installed in the existing routers, and we have to transition or phase it in somehow. And so what we're doing is we have islands of IP multicast capability, routing capability, and then we join them up by tunnels, a tunnel being forming a unique, encapsulating a multicast packet inside of a unicast, sneak it by routers who don't understand multicast, and then de-encapsulating it when you get to the next island and then routing it onwards. And it's this interconnection of islands that I'm calling a virtual Internet. The goal is that, in fact, the virtual become one-to-one with the physical network, and that the capability get down into the routers. This tunneling mechanism is very inefficient. We end up sending multiple copies of the same packet over the same link, which is what multicast is trying to avoid.
Why are you sending multiple copies over the same link?
Well, if, for example, my machine here at Xerox PARC my multicast router here has two peers, one in Barnet and one maybe at NASA, because the routers between here and those two destinations do not support multicast, I have to encapsulate and send an individual unicast copy to each of those destinations. And there's only one wire that goes out of here, the T1 link from here to Barnet, so there are two copies with identical contents but different destination addresses.
Now, the MBone is a global multicast group. Do you think multicasting will, in fact, be used for global communications, or is multicasting going to usually be used within a local environment? Do you have any feel for that yet?
Both.
Both.
Both. In the sort of most obvious applications are conferencing, which the use of it for remote conferencing, its value is increasing the further away the participants are. If we have to have a conference between someone in Australia and someone in Sweden and someone in California, then the value of that is greater than if it's a meeting between three other people in the Bay Area or three people here at Xerox.
You've been testing a lot of this out on the MBone with something called IETF-TV, broadcasting, multicasting the IETF sessions. Can you tell us a little bit about that? Is this a good way to test the service out? Is it an operational thing? Should we expect all IETFs to be multicast in the future?
Well,
do you have other work to do?
That's my hope. The idea to do this came out of the challenge that I don't remember who it was that set, but somebody said that we ought to be able to start using our internet technology to facilitate participation in IETF meetings. And so we thought there's at least the potential here to start experimenting with the ideas of having remote participation in IETF meetings. We had some tools, this multicast infrastructure or the software to build the multicast infrastructure, and new audio tools, the VAT program from Van Jacobsen. At the second IETF we did this, we had a video program from BBN, and the third time we had a couple video programs, from one from Park and one from INRIA in France. And
I hear video conferencing as an application that goes on the InBone. Are there other applications that you see multicasting being used for now or coming soon down the pike besides the video conferencing?
I keep hoping. Mm-hmm. There's actually an interesting, someone posted a message to the InBone list saying that next month they're going to be doing some oceanography experiments in, I think it was the Gulf of Mexico, where they have underwater robots. And they want to transmit the data that these robots are collecting in real time out as multicast so that multiple receiving sites can be tracking the data. And in fact, this may include video of, you know, the undersea camera. So for sort of dissemination of scientific data that's being collected in real time, that's an obvious application. I mentioned resource location mechanisms, although that may turn out to be one of the applications that is more, tends to be more localized than global. I don't think you're going to do multicast searches globally to find resources.
The InBone, you described it as a virtual IP network, and in this case it's being used to do multicasting, but that's a form of an enhanced IP. Can the InBone be used for other types of experiments besides just multicasting?
Oh, sure. This whole idea of building a virtual network on top of the internet there are analogs in the way, for example, people run IPX Novell networks across the internet where they tunnel through IP. That's building a virtual IPX network. The mechanism by which we're going to be able to deploy a new version of IP, I expect, is going to look very much like the InBone, where, again, we're going to have islands of new capability, and you have to get through the existing infrastructure, and you're going to do this kind of tunneling mechanism. So, for example, we're planning with the SIP work to exploit the InBone or something very much like the InBone as a way to get large-scale experience and testing with SIP and as a way of demonstrating that you can, in fact, transition to it.
You talked about SIP. The simple IP is what SIP stands for?
That's one of the things it stands
one
for.
One of the things it stands for. It's an acronym with many reverse engineerings. SIP is an attempt to solve the problems that were originally posed by the routing and addressing task force of routing table explosion and address space exhaustion. Are you trying to solve other problems at the same time when you're designing this new IP?
Well, yes, and it's the addressing and routing problems that motivate thinking about installing a new IP, but if you're actually going to go to the effort of installing a new IP, the temptation is irresistible to try to do other things as well. And certainly there are many aspects of the IP, current IP protocol suite that could use some improvement.
What are some of the more important ones that you think need to be in the next version?
Auto configuration of some sort is very important as the internet service becomes more ubiquitous and more laypersons become involved in running IP systems. They facilitate making it a lot easier to install IP systems and use them is very important. We're trying, I don't know how successful we'll be, but we're trying to define the security protocols along with IP, with SIP rather, such that we might actually have security in there right from the beginning. That's obviously a big hole in IP and why I think one of the inhibitors to the growth of IP is the lack of strong security.
So what does that mean? Does that mean encrypting the data inside the IP packet? Does it mean putting some kind of authentication mechanism in?
It means at a minimum authenticating. So I guess, what they refer to as both authentication and...
authorization.
No, what's where you can detect if it's been tampered with. Tampered either accidentally or maliciously.
Okay. So message integrity.
Integrity,
is
that's the word.
One.
Thank you. It's not... I mean, clearly, encryption gets you into all sorts of political minefields having to do with export controls and so on. And there's a lot of traffic on the Internet. There's no particularly strong reason to encrypt it. And the basis of our sort of proposal for what to do with SIP is based on the SP3 security protocol level 3 work done by NIST, and I think it's since been taken into the ISO world as NLSP, the Network Layer Security Protocol, which is a way of encapsulating the payload part of an IP or an internet datagram and applying either integrity checks to it or integrity plus encryption.
So SIP is ISO compliant?
At an abstract level, sure.
I
hope they'll adopt it.
You're listening to Geek of the Week. Support for this program is provided by O'Reilly & Associates, recognized worldwide for definitive books on the Internet, Unix, the X-Windows system, and other technical topics. Additional support for Geek of the Week comes from Sun Microsystems. Sun, the network is the computer.